You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Hello, you beautiful people. Table Talk is a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we chat with visionaries from across the food industry to discover the ideas that will transform our food landscape. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm a gastronaut. Today, we're exploring a battleground as we tackle the issue of health claims on food packaging. It's something that's baffled me for years. There's an astonishing array of appealing, inspiring, yet sometimes unintelligible or downright dodgy health claims in marketing and on packaging. And it's quite possible that shoppers neither understand nor trust health claims. On the flip side, there are also products that seem to have a decent nutritional point to make, but sometimes they aren't allowed to, and food manufacturers must dread the long and winding road of red tape ahead of them if they choose to say their product might benefit you. And are they right to even start down that road? So, what needs to change? Well, I'm joined by someone on a quest to improve the situation. Professor Rodney Jones is Professor of Sociolinguistics and Head of Department, University of Reading, but he's also the principal investigator of the Health Claims Unpacked project, which is developing a set of guidelines to communicate health claims more effectively. Hello there, Rodney. How are you doing?
Hi, Stefan. It's really great to be here with you today.
So glad to have you. Now, I've described this as a bit of a battleground with shoppers and manufacturers pretty much on different sides. Is that unfair? How do you see the current situation and why are you doing what you're doing?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank you again for having me. And before I launch into talking about what we've been finding in our project, I really do need to acknowledge the funders of our project. The project is funded by the European Institute of Innovation and Technology, specifically the EIT food section of that of that organization. And they've been funding our project for 3 years now. I did like your description at the beginning of the program, Stefan. I think you got it right. It really is a battleground. You have different parties involved, different stakeholders involved. You have, of course, consumers who really want to understand how to eat properly. You have regulators who really want to make sure that consumers are protected. And of course, then you have manufacturers who have a range of different interests. I mean, they, of course, want to sell their products, but they also want to be able to communicate clearly and accurately and effectively to their consumers about the health benefits of their project. And so so it is a fraught issue.
So tell me a little bit about the Health Claims Unpacked project. What is it and what are you up to?
Well, the purpose of the project is really to address this issue that we've been talking about, to try to understand whether or not consumers understand health claims that they see on food packages, and try to understand the kinds of challenges that manufacturers face when they decide what kinds of wording to put onto their packages. As you probably know, in Europe and also still in the UK, the health claims on food packages are regulated. In the EU, they're regulated by a regulation that stipulates that manufacturers are only able to use health claims that have been approved by the European Food Safety Authority. And the European Food Safety Authority has a list of approved health claims. You can go to the internet and you can read this list. There are around 260 or so health claims that have thus far been approved.
And so, like a fun afternoon of reading.
Yeah, manufacturers, when they want to use a health claim, when they think, oh, there's something good in my product, I want to make a claim about it, they can go to this list, they can choose the health claim, and they can put it on their package. But unfortunately, it's not that simple, because if you do read this list of claims written by scientists in the European Food Safety Authority, you may have a difficult time understanding them, because they're written in sort of very, very dense scientific language. So you have claims like olive oil polyphenols contribute to the reduction of oxidative stress. Most consumers wouldn't understand this sentence. And so what we're interested in is trying to make these very, very difficult to understand but accurate health claims more accessible to consumers.
And does this come from a personal feeling that people have got it wrong? Why are you involved? I'm fascinated by the fact that you're a sociolinguist, so you're interested in how people perceive different words and what that means about society and culture. But did it come from a frustration or an anger inside you where you thought, oh, for God's sake, these people are on the verge of lying?
Well, it does come from a kind of long-standing interest I've had as a sociolinguist in the discourse of health. As a sociolinguist, what we're interested in is how language is actually used in society, and particularly how it's used in different kinds of domains, for example, the law, politics, and health. And my sort of main field of interest for the past 30 years or so has been health. So I've looked at, for example, doctor-patient communication. I've looked at the way health promoters try to change people's behavior. And I'm particularly interested now in how people communicate about the health benefits of food. I really developed this interest when I was living in Hong Kong some years ago. And at that time, the Hong Kong government instituted a very, very strict new food labeling law. In fact, it was stricter than almost all of the countries from which Hong Kong imported its food. And so what this meant is that the retailers would get their packages of food with all sorts of claims and wording on them that were no longer permitted in Hong Kong. And they had to take black Sharpies and scratch out all of these claims that were no longer permitted under this new law. And this seemed to me to be ridiculous. And so I did a little project there funded by the Hong Kong government to look at the impact of this new law. And of course, the impact was that it didn't actually increase consumers' trust about the food they were buying. In fact, it had the opposite effect, because they'd go into the supermarket and they'd see all of these food packages with the wording redacted, and they wondered what they were saying. And so
what am I missing?
Exactly. And so the law backfired. And that's what I often find with these kinds of regulations, that the intent is quite noble. The intent is quite positive. Of course, they want to protect consumers, and they want to make sure that manufacturers don't make exaggerated claims or claims that can't be substantiated. But sometimes the way the regulation actually pans out in reality doesn't actually have the same, doesn't have the effect that they're trying to have.
Yeah. Now, I think it's one of those extraordinary issues where it's easy to dismiss this and say, well, does it really matter? You know, it's just a few vitamins and minerals. And, you know, it's just a little health. We're just saying it's going to be good for you. You know, it's food. You know, food is good for you because it helps you run around for the day. But it's actually quite, the impact of this is huge, because the industries we're talking about, specifically the nutrition industries and vitamins and things like that, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, isn't it? And people, it starts with a small health claim of somebody saying, this is probably going to be good for me. The next, you're having people saying, taking pills because they think it's going to make their skin better and be more beautiful. Yes. So I mean, the impact can be huge from things. And it builds up, doesn't it? Once you're delving into homeopathy, suddenly you're looking at people who are giving up standard cancer treatments for something that has made a claim. So the impact can be
absolutely
huge, can't it?
Absolutely. I mean, quite simply, from the manufacturer's point of view, all of the research shows that that having functional food claims on food packages increases people's desire to buy the food. So it works. And so obviously manufacturers do want to make claims about their food. But food packages are part of our whole culture, and they're part of the way people learn about health and learn about nutrition. And so the kinds of claims people see on food packages affects their understanding of what is good, what is bad. And so it can have sort of a dramatic effect on the kinds of things that are on people's radar when it comes to health. Mm. A good example is omega-3. I mean, I think 20 years ago, nobody heard of omega-3. I mean, scientists knew that it was good for you. It wasn't something that was sort of recently discovered, but it's something that wasn't on the radar of the general public until food manufacturers realized, oh, you know, this is something I can put on my food packages. I can put omega-3 and explain to people why omega-3 is good, that it's good for the heart and this sort of thing. And in a way, this is quite good because it does educate people about health. But on the other hand, it does sometimes result in sort of a kind of trendiness around nutrition. So, you know, this week it's omega-3 and next month it's something else and this sort of thing. And so there is something quite dangerous about this kind of communication. So any effort to try to make this kind of communication clearer, more efficient, and really more standardized, I think is a very good thing. And that's the reason, I suppose, we have these laws. And that's the reason the European Union decided that they wanted to strictly regulate health claims on food packages. But as I say, the problem with that is that their efforts to regulate these health claims has resulted in consumers actually having a more difficult time understanding these health claims because they're written in that kind of scientific language. And it's also made the job of manufacturers much more difficult because, you know, they are able to change the wording a little bit. The law does say, okay, you can change the wording a little bit for linguistic or cultural reasons, but there is no guidance about that. And it's a real gray area. So a lot of manufacturers don't want to bother. They don't want to take the risk of being adjudicated. They just decide, well, you know, maybe I'm not going to use any health claims on my food, which, I mean, may be okay, but then you're giving up the opportunity to actually communicate with your customers something about the health benefits of the food and more general kinds of opportunities to educate people about the benefits of certain kinds of nutrients.
So before we get into the sort of positive side of it, go on, give us some of your pet hates. I've got a particular fascination with the back of London buses at the moment, where a well-known vitamin company is implying quite a lot. David Gandy says his chosen vitamin brand helps me maintain the level of energy I need for a busy lifestyle. They're great and reliable daily support. I mean, it sounds nutritionally, but it doesn't mean anything, does it? What are your favourite claims or your least favourite claims?
Well, I can say that one of the ways manufacturers use this law or try to perhaps adapt this law to some of their needs is by using approved health claims. So they go to the database and they choose a health claim that they think they can use because they have the requisite amount of a nutrient in their product. So they take the health claim, which already is difficult to understand, but that's okay, because they don't intend for the consumers to use the health claim, to read the health claim. They actually put the health claim on the back of the package in very, very small letters. Right? And what that allows them to do is to make more general claims about their product on the front of the package. So they can say something like, gives you the energy. They can say something like exactly what you've said. As long as somewhere on their package, they have the health claim, biotin contributes to normal energy metabolism, which is an approved claim. Right? Of course, they don't want to put that on the front of the package because nobody's going to like that. You know, biotin contributes to normal energy metabolism. They don't get that, but they do get, you know, gives you energy for your stressful lifestyle or your busy lifestyle. Yeah. Right, and so having that health claim in microscopic lettering on the back of their package gives them the ability to make that more general health claim on the front of their package. But of course, that more general health claim is less specific, is in many ways less useful for consumers because they don't know what energy means. They don't know why this product gives them energy. They don't know, for example, that it's actually a particular nutrient, biotin. And so you miss out on that opportunity for them to actually learn something about nutrition.
Yeah. And about oxidative stress and all sorts of things like that. Now, I get the fact that food manufacturers are trying to make a buck. We all are. You know, I like being paid for my work. You know, we all do. We're all trying to make a buck, but there needs to be a level playing field, and we need to be honest with people. I wonder, though, is there a side of the industry that's missing out here? You know, you get your cabbage and it's sitting in the fresh produce section, and it says red cabbage on it, and it says it's going to be 79p. I mean, they could make all sorts of claims about phytochemicals and about polyphenols, sure, and all sorts of extraordinary things. Do you think some people are missing out on saying health claims, or are they just being brilliantly restrained?
Well, I mean, health claims are generally made, and health nutritional labeling requirements as well generally apply to packaged food, not to unpackaged food. So when you go to the greengrocer, you buy some nectarines or a head of cabbage or a bit of celery. Of course, then there are not going to be health claims on that. In fact,
but why not? Let's throw some health claims around. Might get more people eating celery.
We might do that, but then that would require us to have packaging for the celery, and that's probably not so good for the environment. I mean, it's quite interesting because, you know, we have been going throughout Europe. You know, this is a European-wide project, so we've been talking to manufacturers all over Europe about health claims. And we did talk to a manufacturer of vegetables. Now, they don't sell fresh vegetables. They sell frozen vegetables. And we asked in France, and we asked them, okay, well, what about health claims? Do you use health claims on your food? And they said, we sell vegetables. Why do we need to make health claims about vegetables? And so I think there is a kind of general understanding among the public that vegetables, fresh foods, whole foods are beneficial. And in fact, many of the consumers we spoke to in focus groups told us that their main strategy for healthy eating was to avoid buying anything in a package. Don't buy anything in a box, they said, because if it has a box, if it's surrounded by a box, it's probably not very healthy. I mean, fair enough, that is a strategy, but it is a bit unfair because there are actually lots of different kinds of foods that are very healthy, that are in boxes, that are packaged, and that are even processed in one way or another. Various kinds of breakfast cereals, granolas, yogurt, right, juices, all sorts of very, very healthy foods that do come in packages. And they do fall under nutritional labeling regulations and health claim regulations. And so manufacturers do have the opportunity, but I would argue, you know, have the right and have the need to communicate to consumers what are exactly the health benefits of their food. What is it that distinguishes this product from another product? It's a kind of a balance. The government is absolutely right. The EU is absolutely right to want to regulate this, to want to keep those manufacturers honest. At the same time, the manufacturers are absolutely right to want to be able to clearly and accurately communicate the benefit of their product to the consumers. And so this, I think, is where the regulation falls down.
And there's the other benefit as well of you know, everyone has to apply themselves to the same rules.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of manufacturers want to say, well, as long as everyone has to do
as
that.
As long as everybody has to do that. Well, that's actually one of the problems with the law, though. And it's a kind of a linguistic problem, actually, quite interestingly. These regulations, the original language of all of these approved health claims is English. But there are approved translations of all of these health claims in different in different European languages. But, you know, languages are very, very different from one another, and it's almost impossible to translate sort of word by word to get the exact meaning when you translate from one language to the other language. So what you often have are slight differences in the meaning of these health claims from one language to another. And sometimes those differences, when it comes to marketing food can be quite substantial. And I'll give you an example. In the UK, the authorities in the UK are very strict about requiring food manufacturers to use the word normal rather than the word healthy. So most of the approved claims will use the word normal. They say, you know, calcium contributes to the development of normal bones. Now, of course, manufacturers don't like this because nobody wants to be normal. Everybody wants to be healthy or strong.
You want to be special.
Yeah. And so it's not a particularly effective marketing word. But we've also found in our research that it's also semantically not a very effective way to communicate to consumers, because most consumers don't really understand what normal means in the way that scientists understand what normal means, right? So the manufacturers would rather use the word healthy. The consumers would actually also hear the word healthy, because then they would understand that, oh, this is actually good for you. But they can't use it. They got to use normal. But in Poland, when you translate these sentences into Polish, the official translation translates normal into the word healthy. Because in Polish, to use the word normal in that way, it just doesn't work in Polish. It doesn't make sense in Polish.
It's almost like we need a linguist on the job.
Well, exactly.
Here.
That's the thing. And so it does create this kind of unequal playing field. If you're a Polish manufacturer, you're able to talk about healthy stuff. If you're a British manufacturer, not so much.
Yeah. So what's interesting is you've mentioned semantics. We're talking about inference. We got a picture of Tess Daly with her luscious, streaming locks of hair and sort of vague mentions about hair and health and minerals. And I think it's suddenly an advertiser will use various different tricks to imply that this vitamin will make your hair better. It will make you more luscious and test daily like. Now, I mean, it was ever thus, really, wasn't it? I mean, you wouldn't put your model in an unaspirational. You wouldn't put your clothes on an unaspirational looking model, whether that's a large person or a small person. But you're using various different tools to flog your stuff. But you also mentioned about people's reactions to sorts of claims. What sort of reactions have you found? So you said that some people are less trusting of stuff that's in packaging. You said that some people weren't very keen on claims that have been crossed out. What else? What are other people's reactions to these claims?
So this was really the starting point for our project. We did a large number of focus group interviews with consumers of different demographics in different European countries, and we gave them a bunch of food packages, and we asked them to sort of tell us whether they thought this food was healthy or not, and what they were looking at on the package that made them think it was healthy. And a couple of important things we found out. We found out, first of all, that when they were confronted with health claims, they usually didn't believe them. Right? And they usually didn't understand them. And this lack of understanding and lack of belief is related, right? Because they thought that they were written in this kind of very dense scientific language in order to trick them. Yeah, they say, oh, that's just scientific mumbo jumbo. They're just trying to trick us into thinking this is healthy. And of course, that is quite unfair to the manufacturers, because it's not the manufacturer's fault that they're using these hard to understand health claims. It's the regulations' fault. The second thing is that most of the consumers didn't know that these health claims are regulated. They thought that manufacturers could just write anything on their packages and get away with it. So that's a really important failure of communication when it comes to the regulators, right? Because, as I said, rather than increasing consumers' trust in food, the opposite has actually happened, that the consumers have less trust in these kinds of health claims. But we also found a lot about what you were talking about before, about inference. And, you know, inference is really the core of sociolinguistics, the idea that we often communicate things not indirectly, yeah, not by expressing them in these very explicit ways, but expressing them in very implicit ways. And these were often the things that really affected consumers. So the color of a package. Yeah? So, for example, if they saw a breakfast cereal that had a lot of brown and yellow or primary colors, they thought, oh, this is not healthy. Even though it had all these health claims about how great it was, this is obviously not healthy. Yeah, you can just it just doesn't make you feel healthy when you look at the colors. Yeah, but if you saw it was sort of muted colors and brown and some greens and sort of sepia and these kinds of nature-oriented colors, people would say, even if it had no health claims at all, people were more likely to say, okay, this is healthy. And you're right.
And interestingly, McDonald's completely changed their storefronts using those sort of semantics. So those little signifiers of colors implying health.
And of course, you know, advertisers and manufacturers know this. They've known this for years. And so designing food packages is, you know, it's a science, and they spend a lot of time and they spend a lot of money and they have lots of different kinds of experts weighing in on this kind of process. There are ways of implying health claims through pictures, for example, having pictures of healthy people, as you say, or having a icon of a heart can imply that, okay, this is good for your heart. But the regulation does address that. The regulation does define a health claim as anything that explicitly or implicitly communicates that there is a relationship between one constituent of the food and some kind of health benefit. And people manufacturers in the UK and across Europe have been adjudicated, have been challenged for these kinds of implied claims. There's a manufacturer, I won't tell you who the manufacturer is, but they manufacture kind of a healthy drink. And they, during the London Olympics, they had some advertisements with little bottles of this health drink performing different Olympic sports. Running on a track or swimming or, you know, throwing a shot put and this sort of thing. And they were adjudicated because it was determined that by showing the bottles of drinks, these cartoon bottles, performing athletics, they were making a health claim. They were claiming that this drink gives you energy or is beneficial for athletic performance or something like that. And so they had to pull the ads. Yeah. And so
which is great that's, you know, people are actually, you know, putting these regulations to the test and applying them properly.
It is good, but it is also really difficult for manufacturers in this case as well, because it's not like I can look at the regulation or I can, you know, look at some guidance and I can say, okay, here's what I can do and here's what I can't do. Yeah. It's all up to sort of who gets adjudicated and who doesn't get adjudicated and the kinds of attorneys, the solicitor they have representing them and this sort of thing. And so there are plenty of other manufacturers who have maybe sports figures on their packages or advertisements who have not been adjudicated. So it's really very much the kind of luck of the draw, you know, and, you know, of course, they have to hire all sorts of regulatory consultants and legal teams and nutritionists and all sorts of people to help them whenever they actually want to make some kind of health claim, or even if they just want to put a picture on their package. They've got to spend a lot of time and spend a lot of money to do this. And I mean, I suppose if you're a big company, if you're PepsiCo or something like that, it's perhaps not such a burden because you will already have a large budget for that. If you get sued, you can absorb that. But if you're a small company, just sort of trying to get started, then it becomes much more challenging. It becomes much more difficult.
Yeah, and can make or break.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's move on to the sort of the proactive side of this. Now, I believe that you're launching an online dashboard. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing?
Right. So we have the problem. The problem is consumers don't understand these health claims. How to make them better? How to linguistically make them better? Are there particular kinds of linguistic tweaks that we can make to these health claims to make them easier to understand and to make them more more effective? And so we've created a website, www.unpackinghealthclaims.com, that you can go to, and you can engage in a range of different sorts of games and activities around sort of shopping. Or there's one activity where users are asked to sort of design their own package and design the health claim they want to put on the package. And this platform is available in English, French, German, and Polish. This year, we're trying to make it available in Romanian and Hungarian as well. And the purpose of this is really to give us data on the kinds of wordings that that consumers find easier to understand and that they prefer when they're reading their health claims. And then we can feed back this information to the regulators to help them to improve the regulation, and also to the manufacturers to help them to understand how to not just more effectively, but also accurately communicate the health benefits of their products.
So with that information, what do you do with it? How do you then feed that into policy and regulation? Is there a simple leap from getting that empirical information and using it?
Well, this is always the challenge, isn't it, with research? Getting that research to the people who need it, and getting people to act on the kinds of findings that you've made available. And so this year we're working on a kind of a, we call it research and consumer insight platform. And on this platform, regulators, manufacturers, and consumers as well can access the results of our project in real time. And what I mean by in real time is that the results and the analysis will change as more people use our consumer platforms. And so they'll be able to go in and to find out, for example, whether or not, what are the factors that determine whether or not a consumer thinks one sentence, one health claim, is different from another health claim, which is actually quite important for manufacturers when they're challenged by authorities and say, oh, you've changed the meaning of this health claim. They can look at this data and they can say, okay, well, you say I've changed the meaning, but consumers actually think the meaning here is actually very, very similar. And so that's actually really, really interesting and important information. They can get information about how much using a particular wording of a health claim affects the consumer's willingness to pay a higher price for the product. And they're also able to find out what are the particular kinds of linguistic determinants, what are the particular kinds of grammatical structures or vocabulary items that are likely to make a consumer understand and prefer a particular kind of health claim. We're working with computer scientists, and we've actually developed an algorithm that will predict a consumer's preference for a particular health claim. And so manufacturers will be able to go in, they'll be able to choose a health claim that they would like to use, and then get a kind of calculation about the likely consumer preference for a particular kind of wording that they would like to use.
That's really good, because on one level, I would imagine a lot of food companies see you as an adversary, as somebody who's stopping them from doing things. But actually, they want your advice. You know, you can tell them what they can do and what makes sense. So you're very valuable to them as well. I mean, you could make a big buck from this.
That's not really our intention, but I will say that, you know, we entered into this project with, I mean, kind of following, I think, EIT Foods' kind of remit of basically improving the food system in Europe. And so EIT is an organization. They work with all sorts of stakeholders. They work with consumers. They work with a large number of academic institutions such as my own, but they also work with manufacturers and industry as well. And really, for EIT, it's not about taking one side or another side. It's about creating a kind of dialogue, a dialogue between the manufacturers and the regulators, between the manufacturers and the consumers, and between the regulators and the consumers, which is, this is a kind of conversation that really hasn't happened. I mean, the regulators are, they're trying to protect the consumers, but there really hasn't been enough kind of conversation with the consumers about whether or not this regulation is working and what kinds of things could make it work better.
I love the combination of linguistics and business and advertising and health. It's so complex. I'm surprised that you can actually get up in the morning and do it, because it's, there are so many different elements. It's like a sort of happy chaos. Just one last question then, really. What is it that you would really like to achieve, an actual practical outcome from your work? And obviously there's no sort of single moment where you can say, well, done that, fixed all of that. But what are you hoping to achieve overall?
What we would like to achieve overall is somehow affecting the way the regulation is written, the kinds of guidance that accompanies the regulation, and the way the regulation is enforced in various European countries. Trying to inform that regulation and enforcement with some empirical evidence about actually what consumers understand and how they process these health claims. We really think that would improve the regulation. That would improve a regulation a lot. And so, of course, that's for us the gold standard, to actually try to affect the policymakers on this. But in the meantime, I think that we can also be of use to manufacturers and to consumers as well. I mean, whenever a consumer goes on our platform and engages in these games and activities, they are learning. They're learning about health claims. They're learning what a health claim is, which is something that actually quite a lot of consumers don't really know. They're learning about the regulation. They're learning about the nutritional benefits of certain kinds of nutrients. And so there is this kind of broader educational purpose in our project, and also helping manufacturers to grapple with the kinds of challenges they're facing in, I mean, really genuinely and sincerely trying to comply with the regulation, but also wanting to communicate effectively and clearly with their consumers.
I think you've made some very simple and humble claims there, but what you're actually doing is really fascinating. I prefer to paint you as a word warrior, wielding the simple sword of truth and slaying terrible health claims as you pass. Professor Rodney Jones, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been an absolute
pleasure. I really enjoyed it, Stephen.
Thank you. Now, you've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. And if you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts, in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry. Some recent favourites has been our look at the science behind fuller for longer food and the episode on chrononutrition. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.